Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Yes, you said it with gravitas.
I sure did. Something
what it deserves.
Worthy of Nobel consideration deserves a little gravitas.
Nobel, more like Taco Bell.
Keep going. What's below them on the Mexican food chain? What's the other one?
There's Del Taco.
Del Taco. That's
yeah.
It. Where are Del Taco and Taco Bell and the? I don't know how they rate
on the
with
spectrum?
Each other. Yeah, in terms of.
I mean, I've always been a Taco Bell.
Okay.
Purist.
All right.
But
very
I think
good.
California, Southern Californians right. like Del Taco.
Is Del Taco only here in SoCal?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I don't trust a Mexican eatery where you can get French fries.
Oh, I see. I didn't know they had French fries.
Yeah, they do.
That does seem suspect.
Mm-hmm. No.
And lasagna. Yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Did we say what the premise is
or who we are or what this is?
You're Jesse Gaskell and I'm Mike Sweeney and we're writers on Conan.
Turned podcasters.
Right.
If you couldn't tell.
Against our will. No. We this is fun. I love talking to you every week.
I do too. I know.
Oh my
and then
God.
I'm only mildly horrified when I remember that it's being recorded for public consumption.
Sometimes I actually forget. I get in that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Where I totally forget. And I just happen to have headphones on and talk into a microphone. That's how I normally converse with people now.
Hey, so one thing we're doing on this podcast is going through...
Mexican food.
Is we're tracking Conan O'Brien's late night career from start to bitter end.
Right.
No, it's
and
still ongoing.
Way,
in a way.
Exactly. See, we'll always have a job because he's still alive.
Alive. I know. And in fact, he's still doing shows. And he did one last week. You were there.
At the Wiltern Theater, very famous, beautiful Art Deco theater here in Los Angeles. He did his Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a live version. And he's just kind of been venturing into that. He did one back in November at the Wiltern.
That one was really fun.
With Will Arnett, you and I were there. That was fun. And I think he did one with Marshawn Lynch, a smaller scale one with a small audience. And then back to the Wiltern last week.
For Bill Hader.
Bill Hader, who is, you know, fantastic guest.
Yeah, great guest.
Yeah, so Conan was, afterwards, he's like, well, that just was, you know, delightful because he just zipped through
it. Oh, I'm glad Conan had fun.
Yeah, well, he's the host.
That's what's important.
Sona did too, and so did Matt Gourley.
When I heard that they got, I mean, this was a big get for them.
Yeah.
They got somebody to warm up the crowd.
Oh, ha.
Somebody named Mr. Mike Sweeney.
I forgot we had talked the week before about me introducing Conan. Like he.
Right. Because Conan can't just introduce himself.
Right. And then, but then I got there and it's like, oh, well, maybe you can go out and kind of focus the crowd.
Oh, wow.
Just because,
so you didn't know you were going to have to do crowd work?
Which is it's best that way that I don't know. Because then I just worry and fret. So I literally had like a half hour notice, and that was good for me. So
wow. Well, how was it? Is it like riding a bike? I mean, when was the last time you warmed up an audience?
Riding a bike. Yes. When you don't know how to ride one, it was exactly like that. I was a total coward. I ran out there for a minute and then ran. I was like, okay, here's the band.
Well, it's, you know, not to overstay your welcome.
I just went out and said hi and told a joke or two. I think I made fun of Netflix, or tried, because it was part of the Netflix comedy, you know, that whole comedy festival.
It was. Okay.
They were part sponsors.
Got it. Well, that's perfect.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, you just try to get the crowd focused, because they're all, you know, their attention is wandering. And then I introduced the band. Mm-hmm. With Jimmy Vivino there. And then he did a few songs. And then you go right into the format of the podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
That's great.
Yeah, it's great. It was fun.
Matt and Sona were there, I'm assuming.
Matt Gourley, Sona were there. And Jordan Schlansky was there.
Oh, perfect.
He did a cameo. And everyone, you know, they're like, oh my God, how are they going to top Bill Hader? Jordan Schlansky.
Did you guys go back and do a postmortem afterwards?
We did do a postmortem, and that was fun. I mean, you know,
said it was perfect. Great job.
We laid out all our rubber stamps.
Don't cut a thing.
Oh, there was someone there when I left who is a big fan of yours.
What?
I forget his name. He's like, where's Jesse? Where's Jesse? I was like, oh, please. She's very, very busy.
It was a fan, or it was
a big fan of yours. Yes.
Oh,
he was there on a date.
Interesting. Oh,
maybe he's trying to make her jealous.
I know.
Yeah.
My fans do get out there. They've got game.
Your fans have game?
Yeah.
Really? I like it. How do you know your fans have game?
From the anecdote you just told.
Oh, okay. So your fan has game.
My fan, yes.
You're one fan.
Based on the sample size of one.
Do people ever come up to you anywhere? Like,
no, not really, except for...
Yeah. Tell me. I want to hear.
I had two people who were fans of the podcast come up to me.
Yeah.
When I was doing canvassing for Elizabeth Warren back for the 2020 election. And they were also canvassing. And it was just a very funny...
Oh, that's
cross section. Yeah, where I thought, oh, okay, there's sort of an algorithm here.
The Venn diagram.
Yes, the Venn diagram of people who live in East Los Angeles and are Elizabeth Warren supporters.
Right.
And also
no, not even supporters. Willing to go door to door.
Willing to go to door
her.
To door. Yes.
That's a much smaller group.
I know. And they also all drove Subarus and.
Please, now you're saying, stop being redundant.
Well, hey, we've got a great show for you today. It's Kimmy Gatewood. She's a brilliant actress, writer, director, and producer who has appeared in countless Conan sketches.
Yes, that's how we got to first meet Kimmy, as she came to the show and started appearing in sketch after sketch. And she's so talented. She's a great singer and actress.
And now she's directing Glow and other TV shows, Girls 5 Eva.
Very successful director. And she mentions this first video that she directed, and I watched it, and it's incredible.
Yes.
You would think someone who's been directing for years did it. It's so...
I know, it's so good.
Tonally perfect and beautifully shot. And mm-hmm. So what an incredible talent. And we're very excited to talk to Kimmy Gatewood.
Our guest today is Kimmy Gatewood. Kimmy, we're so happy to have you here. She's been in a million Conan sketches. I want to list some of your appearances because it's a fun sounding list.
Okay.
Adele Dazeem. Mm-hmm.
Classic.
That's a classic. American Airlines passenger. Arnold impressionist.
Yes. The Arnold choir.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Don't you remember? It was like, I'm sure it was Andre.
Uh-huh. Andre Dubuche.
But it was just like all of us wearing choir robes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody was doing an Arnold impersonation. He's like, don't make it good.
Oh, that rings a bell now.
You're like, I got this.
Yeah.
Chewbacca wife.
Yeah.
Oh.
Conan's new sidekick.
And that was my Andy stand-in.
Oh, you stood in for Andy once. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, yeah, I see the resemblance. Oh. Cora Apple.
Oh, yeah, that's in the Apple Sister. Brian yes. Stack wrote the Apple Sisters in.
Yeah, your group, your comedy group, the Apple Sisters. Erica Sussman. That's very specific. I see fake Italian woman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Halloween procrastinator.
Huh.
I bet I know who wrote fake Italian woman. That was Todd Levin.
Absolutely.
He loves...
fake Italians.
Fake Italians.
It was like me and Stack in a like a
yelling out windows.
Yeah, yelling out windows on the back lot.
Oh, that's great.
Right. That was for, I think, when we went to New York, maybe at the Apollo Theater.
That makes sense. I got this wife.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe I got this wife.
That was a bit with the writer of Game of Thrones.
George R. R. Martin.
Yes,
oh.
Thank you.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah.
It was a bit with George R. R. Martin. And it was like, because we, you know, you'd be watching a television show and you wouldn't know what it was. And then you have this guy come in and be like, I got this. And
oh,
I'm
right.
pretty sure that's what it was. And like, then I just sat with George R. R. Martin as he explained Game of Thrones to me.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that is great.
Yeah.
Wow. We did some fun stuff on that show.
I know. This sounds like a good show.
Yeah.
Insulin Juice Box Singer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was, what's it? Matt wrote that one. Insulin Juice Box. If you got the type 2, you'll love the brand new Insulin Juice Box.
Matt O'Brien?
Matt O'Brien.
Oh, very nice.
My leg was broken.
Yeah.
I broke my leg and they still brought me in anyway.
That's how important you were to the show. We didn't even give you time off to heal broken bones.
And you were still a triple threat.
Yes.
Even in a cast. She can still dance and sing and act.
It was all arm dancing.
Right.
I see snazzy napper woman.
That was my very first bit.
Ooh.
Todd Levin wrote that one. That was based on the... there was some like stupid thing happening. It was like, you can just nap anywhere. Like you just put something on your shoulder and you just nap anywhere.
Right.
So then he came up with, there was sleep rocks where you just put your face in rocks.
Sleep.
Like that. And then like sleep paint. I painted my face blue and then fell asleep and nap. And then I put a bag over my head and hit myself with a hammer and that also put me to sleep.
So many of our sketches are like, you had to see it
right.
for this to make sense.
I think that one was also over a couple of decades. So it's like me and Dion Cole. Someone else, probably Dan Cronin or Brian Stack. But yeah, it was us. We had all these great wigs that we got to wear.
So this is a good place to pick up because this was your first bit that you did for Conan. Did you audition for it? Did somebody know you? How did you come into the fold?
How did you come to us?
Yes.
I was brought in, I never did it in New York and it was like one of my like saddest things that ever happened. Aww. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to be on Conan. Like I didn't do Law and Order at Conan.
What?
Like, New York was like not my place or something.
There's always, you have the rest of your life to do Law and Order.
Yes,
no rush for that.
I can be
a even still going. Death, you yeah. can still do Law and Order.
It was a weird thing to be a New York actor and not do it. But I did comedy in New York City, knew Todd Levin, Andre Dubuchet, Dan Cronin, Brian Stack, and Josh and Rob Kuttner. So we all knew each other from comedy, like at the Gershwin Hotel and Luna Lounge. And so when they came out to New York, LA, I had kind of come shortly after you guys, I think.
Okay.
When did you guys move out to LA?
2009.
Yeah. I'd come out just the year before. So I had like tested for Saturday Night Live in 2008 and came out to Los Angeles when, spoiler alert, I didn't get it.
I thought maybe that was a strategy. Like as soon as I move to LA, I'll probably get it.
Yeah.
Because that's how Hollywood works.
No, but it was like, that was like a big disappointment, obviously, because I love doing sketch comedy. And like, it was just like a call, like from like the heavens above. Todd was the first one to reach out to me. He's like, do you want to do this bit for Conan? I was like, do I? You know? And so I had just come from, you know, New York and I was like working at the City Bakery in Brentwood and you know, waiting tables and stuff. So this was just like the best job in the world. Like, you know, going on the lot and Warner
Brothers slot.
Yeah.
It was really exciting, especially like, I'm sure that people talk about this all the time, that green room with like the coffee.
We had a Keurig.
Yeah, we allowed to use what's in this fridge.
right.
And then like right before
taping.
Yeah, right before taping, like that spread of like cheeses and fruits and vegetables.
We had the same one for 10 years.
I know, yeah. It was so many.
Always good to fill up right before you go out on stage.
On cheese
and crackers.
Yeah. But most like that bit was done. That wasn't a live bit. That was all a pre-record. So I just came in like in the daytime and we did it. And then they're like, you can go. And I was like, I'll stay if you want.
Do I have to? Yeah.
And I remember Todd just singing your praises.
Yeah.
I remember he was the first one. And then everyone else, it was like, oh, yeah, she's fantastic. So,
yeah. And then you quickly became kind of one of our sure bets where it's like, okay, you need this sketch to work.
Right.
We're going to call Kimmy Gatewood.
And then Conan likes you.
Yes.
You know, for him, it's like rehearsals so stressful, you know, and especially a lot of times we'd write stuff and it'd be like, well, maybe we rehearse this one. I like, don't give him a heads up about it because he might just go, oh, that's too crazy. So, when that curtain opens and a sketch is starting, when he knows all the performers and really likes them, you already have a leg up.
I did that Conan's New Wife bit with him, which was my first bit that I think I did with him. Do you remember that bit when he was auditioning new wives?
that wasn't a bit, Kimmy.
Me, Eliza Skinner did it. There's a couple other people. Really funny. That was like a bit that I was so nervous and I ended up doing a Ray Romano impression for him. That was
Seems
fun.
Like and, that would have won him over.
Yeah. Sure. And then I didn't really do that many bits with them until the last thing, which was at Comic-Con, that Snickers ad, the last one at Comic-Con.
Yeah, you know, I wrote that. So we had to do these integrations, they're called, that are basically ads that were tricking the audience into thinking it's a sketch, but it's an ad. And
for the first 15 seconds.
Yes.
And then it's like, wait a minute.
That bit killed.
It totally killed.
It did great.
Kimmy, you were amazing. And do you want to know something? I went out to dinner that night with like a group of friends and then some people I didn't know were there. And they had been at the taping and they told me our favorite sketch was that time traveler sketch with the Snickers thing. And I was like, wait, what? I was looking around like somebody paid them to say this. There's no way that they could say that was their favorite.
They're all eating Snickers.
Yeah, they were Snickers execs, maybe.
Maybe we'll get more Snickers for describing the sketch. Can you describe the sketch? Because it's a fun idea.
Yeah, can I tell a little story about that sketch? Sure. Actually?
Please.
So, you know, I was dressed up in, like, they did my hair. They crimped half my hair. Jeffrey, like, crimped half my hair. And then, like, the other half was, like, kind of up.
Because you were from the future.
Yeah, I was from the future. And I was wearing all silver lipstick. On that live show, Orlando Bloom was one of the guests. And out of the blue, he comes up to me, goes, hey, why are you dressed like that? And I'm like, wait, what?
Like, ooh, was he hitting on you?
No.
That's why you won Katy Perry over.
Yes. Yeah, he thought that I was dressed up like Katy Perry and was going to like prank him.
Do a punk. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, I guess it's all about Orlando.
Yeah.
He's very paranoid.
No, Orlando, she's in a Snickers integration.
Yeah.
I was like, get over yourself.
Think about it.
But I thought that was really funny because I was like, why is Orlando Bloom talking to me? I thought that was a cool benefit of it.
Yeah.
Maybe he just is attracted to anyone that looks like that.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. Do they look like they're from space or the future or a blueberry?
So wait, what was the, so you came from the future?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh, shoot. I don't remember either.
Well, part of it was that you were there to warn Conan about something.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. He was good. Yeah, because the bag of sand was going to land on his head.
Oh wow.
Or a sandbag was falling from the rafters, and it was like you had told Conan to step to his left, and then it falls immediately afterwards. So that
okay,
was
okay. I have the a bit little right bit. Here.
Okay.
I have the bit. Okay.
Oh no.
Okay. So greetings. So sorry. Is this 2019? Yes, it is. Are you Connor? Conan. That's right. And what's this? A television show? It's a mess. Okay. I'm a message from the year 2150. Making some jokes about TV. I have a very important message for you. Oh, but I was too hungry. Like, I needed a pick-me-up to give him this very important message from the future.
Right. Uh-huh. So you kept stalling for what the message was. Gotcha.
Yeah, I was distracted. I got distracted by all the past, you know, the 2019 stuff. Aha! Now I had a little bite of Snickers. I had to, like, bite and chew specifically. Like, you guys had to coach me on it.
That's always the thing with the integrations is they're like, okay, you have to be holding the bar really unnaturally so that you can show the label.
There was like a slice in it so that I could just like pull it off. Or I think actually Conan pulled it off. He's like, slink, you know.
That's so viewers would know how to use it.
But that bit, I was, very nervous because it's like, you know, in front of a live crowd.
It's a big live crowd too. I mean, that's a huge audience.
2,000 people. And you're doing a Snickers ad. I'd be scared as well.
Yeah.
I'd be terrified.
And like Ben Schwartz and I think Middleditch were there, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And like they were doing that bit where they cosplayed as Conan and Andy. And I'm like, hey guys, I'm from the future.
Yeah.
I'm scared of this Snickers ad.
Right.
Yeah. Were they like, why are you dressed like that?
No, yeah. Why are you dressed like that? Right. Katy Perry?
Orlando Bloom sent us.
Yeah.
You blew him off.
Yeah, that bit was that was really fun. And I had to be a local hire for that one, so I drove myself down.
Oh no, and we always did that. Oh,
it was fine. My friend was there anyway. He let me stay in his hotel room. But I love Comic-Con. Those parties are so fun.
They are fun.
Oh right, there are no hotel rooms available, so
it was like booked up too. Yeah,
yeah.
They're like, you can just drive down and drive back, and I was like, no.
Yeah,
guests of Conan sleep on a park bench in San Diego.
I think I was doing Glow at that point too. So Betty Gilpin was there doing something. And so I got to like, you know, I threw on my Glow swag. I was like, hey, I'm on this TV show. So I got to go to all the parties. So that was fun.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're that girl from Conan.
From the Snickers.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It was so great when I started watching Glow and I was like, Kimmy Gatewood's on Glow. Yay. That's a fun thing when you know someone who's on a show or God forbid in a movie and it's just like, oh yeah. No, but it makes it a little more fun to watch.
Wait, so I read, and I mean, we'll come back to Conan stuff, but since we started talking about Glow, you obviously have a starring role, but I had read something that you said you were ready to quit acting.
Oh, yeah.
Right when that happened?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I mean, like, basically, the only thing that was keeping me in the business was, honestly, doing bits on Conan. Like, it was the thing that was like, keeping me alive, you know, it was qualifying for health insurance. You guys were all so nice. And I love doing it so much. But I was like nothing was really like clicking. So I'd been working, like doing day job stuff at like Hulu, Maker, Jash, kind of like these, you know, digital enterprises. And so I got an interview to, be the, like, I forget what the title was. It was an executive producer at Earwolf. And I interviewed. And then they're like, all right, come to New York. And we're gonna, you know, well, basically, like, you're probably gonna get the job. And that's when the Glow audition came. And I was like, all right, I'll be there next week if that's okay. And then I got a call back for Glow. And I was like, well, this is hilarious. Just give me two more days and I'll be in New York.
Right. Oh, that's so amazing.
And then I got
amazing.
The job and I was like,
oh, wow.
Sorry.
Bye. Like, podcasts aren't going to make it anyway.
Right.
Honestly, I don't know at this point if I made the right decision.
Right.
You might. You would be our boss.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
That was such a switcheroo, like interviewing to be a producer on a podcast.
Yeah.
Did you have background in producing things as well at that time?
Yeah. You know, obviously, like when you're in comedy, you have to have like 10 side hustles, you know,
right,
to kind of make it happen. So right. I just learned how to do everything I could and would kind of follow what was happening. I was like the first one to do like a Snapchat series or like the, you know, first Comedy Central. I did YouTube series. I did, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I just would like follow the new medium. And so I was doing Not Safe with Nikki Glaser. I was hired to be a digital producer on that show.
Okay.
Did Snapchat and I ran her podcast and I would do ran her social media content basically. So I had been kind of gathering those skills. I did an interactive series, you know, like a choose your adventure style thing. And then I, you know, I've just done like a bazillion different mm-hmm. weird projects over the years.
And we mentioned the Apple Sisters before, which was mm-hmm. your comedy group. And there's some incredible videos that you did that are so well produced and acted. I mean, they're very funny.
Thank you.
But when you were doing those, were you observing how everything was put together? Because...
Oh, I did all of that, Sweeney.
Ah, okay.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
That was all
I thought
me.
That's where we were going.
I was specifically headed towards, and we'll get to it, your current big career as a director. Like, so I was just wondering, were you directing those early videos then as well?
Actually, my husband was directing a lot of the videos early on. Because he knew he wanted to be a director, like from the minute like he left college after studying, like he did something academic and was like, I want to be a director. But we both met in sketch comedy, so I just mm-hmm. feel like we were the people that were always scheduling, putting things together.
Right,
we were like the ones like building the barn in which to perform the sketch comedy.
And, okay,
so I made a documentary in 2005.
Yeah.
It was at South by Southwest in 2008. It's called Nerdcore Rising. And I taught myself how to operate a camera and how to run sound because we didn't have the money. We had like $15,000. So we borrowed one camera, we bought a camera, and then I taught myself how to use sound.
And how did you teach yourself at that time? Because I mean, it wasn't like there were YouTube videos to watch. How did you do that?
Well, I my friend was working at this like public access station in New York City. And so he's the one who kind of gave me the crash course. And there was a lot of like little like public access things happening where people were, you know, doing comedy.
Right.
For example, I did stand up for a blip and the person who recorded my comedy set was Ed Helms, who I paid $50 to record my set.
Oh, but was he doing that as a side hustle early on? Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that. That's great.
So you learned sound editing from Ed
Helms.
Okay.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
No, he used to just record people's sets. like $50, and then like he totally forgot to give me mine. So he's like, you can have your $50 back, and here's your tape. It was like 2 years later.
Oh no.
He had bigger fish to fry. Very first like films that I made were on my parents' VHS camcorder. And I would just like record and then push, you know, pause and then change the scene, push pause, you know, that way. And then in college, I learned how to edit on the reel-to-reel things. So I've been collecting these skills.
You've always been directing in a way. Yeah.
That's what I was really curious about. So obviously that was in your brainstem back in high school even. So that's, so part, half your brain, I guess, was just observing how all this is and learning how all this was done, which is really cool.
I think it comes from impatience mostly because I'm like, I don't want to wait for somebody else to do something. When I have an idea, I like the spirit, like the power of comedy compels me. I must like, like record it and get it done.
You want to get it made. People.
Yes, I want it to happen, which is why Hollywood is so frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
But thank God we have these funny outlets like, you know, YouTube and social media and podcasts. Like we have these comedy outlets that are just like, but you can tell when I'm bored because I make a short film.
Is that true?
Well, speaking of new skills, when you got the job on Glow, you had to learn how to be a wrestler.
I sure did.
Did you have any sort of physical training prior to that, or that you were starting completely from scratch?
Well, they said, are you athletic? And I said, yes. You know, I mean, I'm fine. But
Oh, yeah. That's like the, you always say yes to everything. Right, like, of course, I can horseback ride. Yeah.
I was like trying to figure out, I was like, did I ever wrestle on Conan or something? And then, you know, I played a lot of nurses and wives. I didn't know how to wrestle, obviously, but I am a physical comedian by trade. The Apple Sisters, my character Cora is the one who pratfalls all the time. I do this really stupid bit where I have carry like a banana peel around and I'm like, you don't know what I'm going to do with it. Lovingly place it down and
she's
then
very
intentionally
loose with her
slip.
Peel. Yeah.
Like I've just always been very physical comedy and those are the comedians I admire the most. And so wrestling came very naturally. In fact, I was the best wrestler.
Oh, I love
in
that.
The cast.
That's awesome.
You can just say flat out, I was the best. Did you guys ever really kind of wrestle? Like go, you know what? We've got some doubt. Let's really wrestle and see.
Well, we did. We loved it. No, it's still, it's all like, it's, you do some, the way that you practice, you do chain wrestling. So you just like do, you practice moves on each other and like, you can absolutely hurt yourself, but it's all choreographed, but you have to know how to kind of catch each other if something goes wrong, you know?
Oh.
But, you know, you have to pick each other up and you use, it's more like dancing than anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's choreographed.
There are moves that people know so that they don't actually break their necks like pile driver, even though it's really dangerous. But it's torture to watch that. I hate it. But we watched a guy, we went to a wrestling match and this guy, these guys were, they were doing a tag team and they were wrestling and this guy, like, he just miscalculated where the turnbuckle was and he banged his teeth into the turnbuckle and his we thought he broke his teeth, but his teeth went up into his head.
Oh, that's much better. Oh.
No.
No, I'm kidding. That's awful.
So and there was blood everywhere. You know, it was crazy.
Mm.
Were you like, you know, maybe I'm not going to do this part.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be a good clown to be a wrestler, which is so I really liked that aspect of it. And I think that's where like Rebecca and I, my best friend in real life and real life Apple Sister partner.
And she was one of the Glow wrestlers too.
Yeah. We got cast together.
That had to be great.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So we just got to do bits all the time. So we came up with the Beatdown Biddies, which were supposed to be one episode. And then they were like, oh, then we'll change it. And they were like, we are obsessed with these characters and wrote them into everything.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. Smart. I mean, and that it seems like that's something you've done a lot is keep creating more work for yourself by showing up and coming up with material for people.
It's the yes and improv, you know, it's like if you see an opportunity where you could enhance somebody's already great, you know, work and just like any art, like the directing, it's like nothing's made of, art's not made of stone. Comedy's not made of stone.
Right.
It's just like pliable. And we're just doing something for the first time ever and then never doing it again. So we should just experiment a little bit.
Do you feel like doing Conan stuff helped at all to prepare you? I mean, cause doing live sketches on Conan is pretty intimidating at first, although you had already been a live performer before that. But do you feel like that helped with setting you up for, I don't know, just being a little more fearless, or you learn any skills, basically?
Come on, throw us a bone. We have an agenda here.
We have to connect this back to Conan somehow. Right.
I mean, I think for me, at least, it's like it taught me definitely how to, it's just like show up and listen, be patient, do the job, like how to really be on set all the time, I think was really good. And like, I mean, I would use live things. I would have like things were cut. Like it just taught me more, I think, more in a more, much more safe and a compressed way of how the business actually works. Like you get cut out of movies all the time. You get cut out of television shows. Your bit gets thrown away. Like, you know, just watching you guys all work as writers, I think was so, you know, informative, and like to see how it goes from the page to that. Now the writers were directing too, which I like to watch, and just kind of like watched everybody's style and picked up stuff where I could. I liked how fast it was. I think that it worked more like a soap opera speed than it did like traditional television. So it was just like, you got to show up, you got to know your lines, you got to be the, you know, do it. Cause you can't do it again. Especially the live stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I hadn't worked with cue cards really before. So that was fun.
Oh
yeah. I know. We're one of the only shows that was using cue cards still.
Yeah.
Cause there's other technology now.
Yeah.
Right. No, but because I think the same reason Saturday Night Live still uses it, because so many people's sight lines are not into the camera. So you need the cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from having worked with teleprompter before too, it's less, I mean, we're changing things right up until the show starts. And with teleprompter, a lot of times it's like, no, it's cut off at this certain time. You can't make changes after that, or it ruins everything.
I'm getting some prompter nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Memories right now.
Oh my God. Do tell.
Prompter nightmares. No,
just like working on different types of shows where Coda was doing something, there's a prompter and you're thrown in with this prompter operator and they all have different personalities.
Why are they all so surly? I feel like every prompter person I've worked with is
cue
really...
Cue card guys are nice, always.
They are nice,
Why are your teleprompter guys so mean?
I don't know. Some of the prompter people are very nice. I have to say it was a case-by-case basis. But yes, some of them would be like, oh, you know, I can't change that now. And you'd be like, we have to work this out because it's got to be. And you know, sometimes the show would be, some people were lifesavers, like they'd be showing a tape roll. And he's like, okay, while they're showing this tape, I can put these changes in. And it's like, oh, God bless you.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Well, Kimmy, you brought up getting cut from things and having to learn how to get cut out of sketches. Do you remember specifically any moments when you got cut from something, or any times when you were really disappointed that something got cut?
Oh man. I gotta go back to my emails.
Or do you have a spreadsheet?
No, I never get rid of emails. I don't know why, but there was like a bit where I think I sent you guys a picture. It's like where I had like a refrigerator in my, and I hit a cooler in my pregnant belly.
Oh my God, that was mine too. Yeah. Oh no.
Oh, you too.
Just traumatized me.
Kimmy has a new best friend.
I was so bummed about that because I tried, I don't think it ever ended up airing, or did it?
Wait, now what I don't was remember. This bit?
It never did. It never
aired. It was like, it was a real product that I wanted to market.
It was an ad parody.
But it was, I was like, this is an actually good idea that needs to go on Shark Tank. Hmm. It was so that women can take things into like stadiums and stuff. It's a fake pregnancy belly, but that's also a cooler.
Right.
And
I
so you can
that.
Stick a whole six pack in there.
That's a great idea.
It was so funny. I tell you, one of my favorite bits was getting to be a Walking Dead zombie.
Right.
And me and Leland did the first zombie lesbian kiss.
Oh, right. Wow. Right. We made television history.
Is that in the Guinness book?
Yeah.
It must be. Did you have to do makeup for a really long time? Were you just sitting for hours?
Yeah, we did. And
and I think we got a real... like an expert in zombie makeup. It was the real deal.
Yeah, it was all the Walking Dead people. And then the guy, Norman something or other, he was there. And
Norman
we got,
Reedus.
Norman Reedus. Leland and I got a picture with him. And then we ended up in some magazine. It was great.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It was like Norman and two zombie lesbians. Yeah.
Making history.
Norman's used to posing with zombies, I assume. Yeah, yeah. That's not.
Yeah. That was one of a couple of zombie bits that I did. There was something where Scott Gardner directed something, I think. Maybe Andre wrote it.
Scott Gardner. Yeah.
Chad Fogelman was in the sketch too. So many funny bits. I'm looking to see if there's any good. You never really sent me scripts. I wouldn't know what I was doing until I showed up most of the time.
That's great to know that perspective. So how would you usually find out about getting cast in a sketch? Was it?
So,
like that day?
Yeah, usually the day before, they'd mm-hmm. be like, are you around tomorrow? And,
you be like, why?
And I'd be like, yeah, of course. Always yes. I was so excited to go every time. There was never a time I was not excited. And sometimes I would know, but most of the time, no. And I would show up and I'd be like, hey, does anybody have a script? They're like, you haven't got one yet? All the time. Every time I would go.
Yeah.
And like, no,
there's no script yet. Yeah. How dare you?
Right.
And I was always,
isn't it enough? We called you.
Yeah.
Have some cheese.
And,
before
I even knew I was doing a bit, sometimes costume would call me and I'd be like, oh, I got the bit. Like, you know, they were doing it.
Yeah.
Cause they would call to either tell me to bring something or they just wanted to be reminded. Like, I mean, they knew my sizes at like, you know, after the 18th bit, but
right.
Yeah.
And then I was always delighted when I'd get a script and then instead of like a character name, it would just be like Kimmy. Andre would do that all the time. He'd just like write my name in the script, which I was very touched by.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You'd made it into character name.
Yeah.
Fame.
It was always like there's sometimes you guys would call me day of and when I wasn't available, I was so sad. In fact, there was one time I was like, I'm just going to take an exercise class, which I hadn't done in a while. And like I missed a call from Rick and they had already moved on to somebody else.
Oh, no.
And I was so sad. And then I started taking
my... And you never exercised again.
That'll teach you.
I started bringing my phone to exercise class.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's relaxing.
Oh, this is so stressful.
Yeah. Ready, coach, put me in.
Yeah. it's like a yoga class or meditation.
Yeah.
Completely silent.
I'm so sorry.
You should have exercised in the early evening that way. Like, well, they're taping now. They couldn't possibly call me this late.
Oh, no.
Or could they? Oh, my God.
We need you for tomorrow morning at 4 in the morning. We need your sizes.
We need you in 20 minutes.
Yeah. I have so many good memories from the show. And like, if you guys call me tomorrow, I would say absolutely say yes, no matter what I was doing.
That's what this is leading up to.
Like, I know the masturbating bear got to do a bit with masturbating bear, which thought would never happen.
A dream come true. What did you do? The masturbating bear was hardly ever on the TBS show. It had to be
masturbating bear's wife.
Very specific. Exactly. She was great as Chewbacca's wife. It seems like the next logical step.
No, I was a nurse. It was a live bit. I was a nurse. And like Gordo was in the suit, which
Michael
I was like,
Gordon,
Gordo's
yeah.
in the suit.
He was in the suit. He was the masturbating bear.
He was always in the suit, even when we weren't doing a sketch.
That's right. He's always came camera ready.
Oh, I have to give a shout out to Jose too, who always used to write me in bits all the time too.
Jose Arroyo, yeah.
Jose
Arroyo, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like you started to have a type that you would play in sketches? Or was it all over the map?
It was kind of all over the map. I played like a prostitute. I played like some kind of telephone operator at some point, nurses, wives. It was all over the place.
A lot of nurses.
Yeah. Often bubbly characters, I think, right?
Yeah,
just
upbeat.
Kind of, yeah,
mm-hmm,
yeah, upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
In the face of disaster.
Yeah.
And some singing gigs, right? There was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I sang for Jimmy a couple times too, just like randomly.
Jimmy Vivino, he was a music director.
And I did, there was one bit I really loved that I don't think it aired at first and then it aired. It was Todd wrote it. It was like some IKEA bit. And I got to be like the IKEA lady who would talk in like some kind of weird Swedish accent. You know?
Oh, that was, I remember that. That was great.
I love that bit. And I remember a triumphant moment where I feel like everybody lost their mind. It was just some like stupid laser pen that Dan Kroner wrote it. It was maybe it's Dan and Andre or something. It was just like this laser pen that I can't even remember the exact bit, but everybody was just like, we've done it. We conquered comedy. There was just like so much happiness all around.
Oh, that's one of the rub light.
Your rub light.
Oh,
you can rub it on this. You can rub it on that. You can rub it on that. Still holds up. Every time I come across that, it is it's a masterpiece.
And
so
I feel like everybody was like, Conan's in the best mood because of that rub light.
Oh, that's so good. You know, a lot of times a head writer would if you have four or five things to rehearse that day, hopefully it's like, what order are you going to show them to Conan? And mm-hmm. you kind of like, do you lead with the best thing or do you
save it for last?
Save it for last because it does affect his mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rub Light was knocked out of the park.
Oh my God.
All the sketches made it in after that.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, we haven't talked about your directing yet, which is such an awesome.
Do the fans even care about it, though?
Of course.
Oh my God, it's so exciting!
It's so exciting, and I mean, I think a lot of people, including myself, really admire your career because you've done everything, but now you're directing TV, which is amazing. How did that come about? I mean, what was the first thing that you directed and
Conan kind of was an influence on my directing career because I don't know if you remember, but I submitted to be a writer on the show. And at the time, Sweeney,
you were
so nice.
Mike Sweeney.
Yes, I did. No, you were so nice. You pulled me aside because I was like performing all the time and you like really like, you know, were so nice like, explaining, you know, why. And you're like, we really are looking for somebody who's like, I can't remember the words, like a filmmaker, I think is the word that you used. And at that moment I was like, huh. I was like, I'm going to go be a filmmaker so I can go write on Conan.
That's why I said it. I knew what I was doing. I knew how to inspire you.
And so that kind of like,
well, thank God you didn't get hired. Cause
yeah. Oh my God. What a dead end.
Just be like us. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, here's our third co-host, Kimmy Gatewood.
Yeah. So my first DGA gig, because I have been doing, I mentioned my documentary, I've been doing shorts. I did a lot of YouTube stuff. That mixed combined with all of like I done Just on Glow, which gave me a new awareness in the industry, and all of my prior directing work got me my first DGA gig on Just Add Magic, which is an Amazon show.
I mean, we're so happy for your success and just proud to have known you way back when.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, do you have any, were there any final Conan memories that we didn't get to that?
Or any advice?
Like a favorite memory for you?
I mean, I definitely, advice is, you know me.
Or advice.
Keep your head up. Keep going. Be nice to everybody.
Yeah.
You could be on a podcast with them 10 years later.
That's
you know?
Right. Better watch out.
No, but it is. I feel like you're the best example of that. That it really makes a difference when you're just pleasant to be around. People want to keep hiring you because you're a joy to have in class.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom. Yeah. I had so many just awesome memories. And I just like the one, there's just little things like just going in, being like escorted like through the office, or like people like, hey Kimmy, and then walking me through like the writer's office, you go through and see everybody working there, and then you go down the stairs and then up to the green room, you know, or they sometimes take you through the elephant doors.
That's a mood booster. It's like, those people are miserable. I feel better. I feel so much better now just getting out of that office.
I know. Yeah. I mean, every little moment really sticks with me. Like, you know, them having my name at the gate, that was even like a thrill.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, being the park in the garage and walking across the street inevitably with like some stupid hairdo because I just like, I was like, just leave it.
Like, this is for work.
Going home like that. That's
yeah.
Maybe I should go out like this and not rush home.
I did after my time traveler bit at Comic-Con, I just had them leave my hair and there was a red carpet picture of me with my hair like the time traveler.
Oh, that's great. Awesome.
Oh, that's great.
We have to
find
that.
Went to a Glow event after that?
I just went to like the Entertainment Weekly party afterwards.
I would love if like the next week there were other people doing that hairdo. Like when we saw it on the red carpet.
Right, right, right. The women of GLOW like it.
It's the latest thing in Paris.
I look back and I was like, that was a bold move. Like insane.
Well, who has $1,500 to spend on a glam squad?
Indeed.
Glam squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be our next integration.
Thank you, Kimmy Gatewood. That was great getting to chat with her.
Oh, it was. And what a rising star.
I'm so excited for all the things she's doing now, all the directing. Yeah. And I love how she had one eye on that from the beginning. It was just absorbing everything in that would lead to that path.
And I think
for her,
figuring out what kind of set she would want to run. And
yeah.
And I think that she has this great energy that would make people want to work with her and have her in charge.
Yes, she's great. And she's confident, but just in a very kind of natural,
And enthusiastic.
Yeah, just a natural way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, just remember this is fun.
Let's make a show with cameras.
Yeah.
We have a fan question.
We do.
Yeah, it's kind of.
We always do.
Aimed at you. I'm going to read it.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Jesse and Sweeney. Big fan of Conan, the podcast, and the work you both do for it. Ugh. I hope this question doesn't come off.
I feel acknowledged.
Yeah, that's right. I hope this question doesn't come off as rude, but Jesse, can I ask how you ended up being on the crew that traveled with Conan on the Conan Without Borders shows? Sweeney, Jose Arroyo, and other people on the crew had been with Conan for a long time at the time, but you were still a bit newer at that point. Did you just, quote, work your way up the ladder quickly, or was it simply a situation where you were the only one up for the travel? Were there other factors that played into it? Thanks, guys. Chris Moran.
Oh, I love this because it reminds me, especially after I got hired as a Conan writer,
yes.
When I would see other people in the comedy scene, I would often get the question, how did you get that?
Right. Oh, that's a classic line.
And in my head, I don't know if I was hearing it this way or if this was really in their intonation, but it really came off like, how did you get that?
Always.
Yeah.
I mean, always that's how you would perceive it.
That's how you perceive it. Yeah. And absolutely. I mean, I think a little bit it was there. How did you get that?
Yes. I literally underlined over their heads.
Yes.
In a thought balloon, the word you.
I'm going to answer, Chris. How I got that?
Yeah.
Well, this is to the best of my memory, and maybe you can fill in the blanks.
Yeah, I have my opinion about this as well.
Well, so the first Conan Without Borders wasn't really a Conan Without Borders series.
No.
Initially, we were just going to Cuba.
Right.
And that was your idea, Mr.
Yeah,
Mike Sweeney.
Let's go to a Caribbean island.
Yeah. Well, no, they had just announced Obama had announced, President Obama had announced that we were opening up relations with Cuba.
Right.
And Americans would be allowed to go there again. And
right.
The idea was that Conan would go and sort of be the first late night host to visit Cuba and do a show there. And so you guys had talked about it. Conan really loved the idea and wanted to assemble a small crew to go.
Right.
And Jose Arroyo and I happened to be the only writers who spoke any Spanish.
Correct.
I speak some Spanish because I was born in Panama, and I actually learned Spanish at the same time as I learned English because my family we moved all over Latin America.
Right.
And so I had experience living in Latin America and doing a lot of travel overseas. And so I think it seemed like I had a valid passport, all those things.
that was the whole soul.
That was
reason.
The clincher, yes.
Yes, it was absolutely that fact.
Yeah.
You just seemed eminently qualified to go to Cuba.
I felt like it was Jose. I had been training my whole life for that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and you didn't realize it. And here it was.
I didn't realize it.
And so off we went. And I pitched the idea and we literally, I think, did it like a week later. I think there was that paranoia of like, oh God, someone else is going to think of this. And
yeah,
do
which,
it.
I mean, people did start doing travel shows, but I don't think anyone was thinking about going to Cuba at that point.
I don't think so. But there was kind of like, let's jump on this and let's just throw it together. And then Jason Chalamet, our producer, found a fixer in Cuba, a local producer, and it all fell into place quickly.
There was a lot of travel restrictions because we, even though we were technically allowed to go, we still had to travel through Canada to get there.
Yes, yes. There were many restrictions and many...
And I remember being really worried because we had all our filming equipment and it was like... Are we going to, you know, it that just always arouses a little bit of suspicion, even though we had, we technically had like the paperwork that we needed.
That is.
So that was how the first one came about. Yeah. And I mean, we had an amazing time putting that together. And
yes, we were only there 3 days.
Is that all?
I believe so. Oh, I feel like it was.
Well, I went a day earlier because we had a B-roll day.
Oh, okay.
Where we were just filming exteriors with the crew. That was the best day.
Yeah. I went down
before
with
Conan.
Before
you and Conan came. Yeah.
Right. Of course. Always. Once those assholes show up, party's over. Yeah. But then I feel like we banged everything out in 3 days and got back. And you know, it was a topical subject. So we edited it as quickly as we could. And TBS said, oh, let's make it a primetime special. I mean, all that stuff. None of this was, it just happened organically.
Yeah.
No. And then after that, it was kind of like, Conan was like, well, I liked the little Cuba team because the next stop was Armenia.
I think at Conan, there tended to be a like, oh, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of with.
Yes. When he likes something or he's comfortable with
or maybe
something.
He's a little superstitious even.
He's like, a little yes, he can
be
superstitious.
Let's just keep it the same and then we don't have any...
Let's not rock the boat.
There won't be no surprises.
Right. Unless, you know, Jose Sweeney or Jesse Fritz out.
So then when we assembled the next travel show, it was the same team. And then it kind of just kept being the same team after that.
And that's it. That's the answer.
And that's it. I mean, sorry to disappoint you, Chris, but I guess I fucking earned it.
Yeah. You worked your way up the ladder, to quote Chris in his letter. But thank you for your interest and thanks for... trying to get in there.
Yeah.
And divide the team.
Thanks for your gotcha questions. No, I mean, you know, I think that a lot of things are that way, where you don't at the time see what the future is on a certain path. You're just kind of forging the path and you don't know what the outcome's going to be.
Right.
And it's not until hindsight that you look back and think, oh, okay, well, that did end up being the travel team. But at the time, it was just one travel show.
Right.
It wasn't a whole series.
Yeah.
And hey, if you like the show, you can always support us by rating Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast on iTunes and leaving us a review.
And you can submit your listener questions. Yes. Please, a voicemail at 323-209-5303 or email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Oh, and one more thing.
What's that, Jesse?
It's my Columbo line. We love you. Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.